A lot of us have been lucky enough to bond with a pet dog, and even if the mutual affection between human and animal can be profound, it probably can't be defined as a necessity. But for author Stephen Cassisto, who is legally blind, the connection between he and his first guide dog, Corky, made a huge difference in his life and opened up many aspects of the world for him. Cassisto writes about the experience of having that new friend and navigating companion in his book, Have Dog, Will Travel, A Poet's Journey, and he's with me. Stephen, you didn't have a guide dog until you were in your late 30s. How well did you get around before that?
Before getting the guide dog, I was a very mincing solo traveler. And there are some backstories in the book where I describe, you know, being in graduate school and not being able to see much and, you know, memorizing the streets of Iowa City, Iowa, like a crime scene detective going up and down the grid of the streets. I didn't want to be seen as blind. I had to work hard at finding my way in the world. And it's funny, right? You know, why would anyone wait until their late 30s to finally figure out that this is a problem? And part of it is that my mom was a severe alcoholic, and I spent a lot of my emotional and intellectual energy trying to fix her. And then the other thing is, I managed to go to graduate school in a small town, and then I wound up teaching at the undergraduate college where I went, which was tiny. And I kind of had the world figured out in a kind of, you know, provincial way. And it wasn't until I lost my job at that little college and realized, oh my gosh, I've got to go to the big world now. And I really don't know how to do it. You know, how is it possible to come to this, you know, understanding late in life? Well, I think we all do come to these things sometimes in odd ways, right? It just really required me to say, I don't like the way I'm living. There must be something better.
How many people knew that you were blind?
Oh, I would tell friends, okay, and, you know, teachers, and they would nod and say, yeah, you know. So I would tell people, but I couldn't tell them. I don't know how to go anywhere. In other words, I would always try to piggyback onto other people's journeys. And they sort of knew I couldn't see, but not really did they suspect that I... if they were to lose me, I was doomed.
Well, was there an extra level of stress? Because you describe being on, was it a Vespa in Santorini in Greece? And you're following the one guy ahead of you because he had some sort of, I don't know, it was a red handkerchief, red shirt, whatever it was. And so that seems like it'd be an extra stress in your life to me.
Well, it's not wisdom to pretend that you can see for the sake of vanity or reception. That was a big psychological hurdle for me, right? That the world would accept me as being, really visually impaired and, you know, to borrow language from the gay rights movement, out as a disabled person. Mm-hmm. That took me a long time to achieve. And so, you know, I was really endlessly trying to do things that other sighted people would do.
And Stephen, you had, as you said, sort of hidden how blind you were for such a long time. And then you got training with a cane because you needed to get trained with a cane properly to then be able to get the guide dog. What had you known about guide dogs before? Were you excited about it?
One famous guide dog trainer once said, a guide dog is just a faster way to get lost. You know, it's up to you to know how to travel as a blind person. Mm-hmm. And so the white cane training is an important preliminary. And a lot of people stick with the white cane. They like it. They may not like dogs, or they feel they can't care for a dog, or what have you. So it's not an either-or thing, like this is the right way to travel as a blind person, and that one isn't. In my case, I just realized, wow, you know, I really like dogs, A, and B, because I knew a friend who had a guide dog, and I could see how fast he could go with it. That the dog is looking ahead a block and a half, and it's making decisions in advance. And so it's, for the most part, faster than a white cane. And then there's this other thing, right? The guide dog is trained in this amazing thing called intelligent disobedience, which means, right, it's not like, you know, jumbo shrimp. It means that the dog is not going to go at a curb or a railway platform or whatever if it's unsafe.
What did it feel like to know for the first time that Corky was going to be yours? And then, yeah, talk about how you bonded with her and that it made a better life for you.
Yeah, I say in the book something about how on the day that we had gotten our dogs for the first time as students at Guiding Eyes for the Blind in the training class, you're presented with the dog after, you know, a couple of days of lectures, and then the rest of the training is about learning how to, you know, care for the dog, work with the dog, know the commands the dog knows. But One of the trainers said something remarkable. She said, you're going to praise your dog all the time. They work for praise. They love praise. And, you know, she sort of taught us to use inflection and tone of voice, right? That you want to say, good dog. And this started a lifelong habit, because I've had dogs ever since, right? Of at least, you know, 20 times a day, maybe more, I haven't counted, where I'm praising the dog. No one had ever taught me in high school, college, junior high, grade school, graduate school, anything about praise, which stunned me. Yeah. You know, I had never had instruction on praise. And I certainly hadn't received any as a disabled person. And so, you know, I found that by praising this dog, in turn, I'm praising both of us for having this relationship and doing things right. And, you know, in turn, we have each other's back, right? You know, we're really a team. And so that was a sort of almost, I hate to say it, but it's almost like a Buddhist breakthrough where I realized, oh, I'm going to open up and start praising. That was a big step for me. It's a modest thing in the larger scheme of things, but it was a profound moment for me.
Stephen, what was your bond like? Because as someone who has owned dogs myself and has loved them and loved them deeply, they were there, though, as, you know, a companion and someone that I look forward to seeing when I get home from work. But in a different sense,
right.
you had this dog that you loved that you also, I mean, in some sense, really needed and really, as you said, expanded your outlook. So when you have the combination of the actual love for the animal and also the idea that you're sort of business partners as well, how does that make things even more special?
I love that. We were business partners. I think that the love for a guide dog is no different than the love that people who own dogs have for their family pets. We love animals because they love us, and they love us unconditionally. Dogs have what we now understand as mirror neurons, that they're capable of understanding our feelings and empathizing with us. So when you've had that relationship, that's a profound thing. And the guide dog's daily work, which is about making sure you don't step into harm's way, is, of course, you know, that's a friend with benefits, right? That's a big deal. And, you know, to lose that beloved partner to old age is very sad and extremely painful. You know, when Corky died and I was really nearly inconsolable, I go and sit under a tree with a, you know, with her urn, with her ashes. And I suddenly think, what would she think? What would she want me to think? And what she would want me to think is stay in the world, keep going, because that's what dogs do.
And the name of the book is Have Dog Will Travel, A Poet's Journey. We've been talking with Stephen Cusisto about it. And Stephen, my pleasure to talk with you. Thanks.
It's a delight. Thanks so much, Steve.